Good afternoon. We will call the Climate and Energy Committee to order. And for the record, we do have a quorum, I think. Yep, we do have a quorum. Thank you. Just double counting here. With that, first on the agenda, we have minutes from January 25th. Representative Hollins, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from January 25th?
Yes, Chair Akam, I have. I would like to move that we approve those minutes.
Wonderful. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. And so first on the agenda, or next on the agenda, we are going to hear a bill from Representative Kraft. And Representative Kraft, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move HF 597 be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right. So Representative Kraft moves House File 597 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I understand you have an author's amendment.
I do. Yes, Madam Chair, I do the DE4. I would like to move the DE4 to get the bill in the shape I would like to have it.
Great. Any discussion on the DE4? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. All right, Representative Kraft, would you like to tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, I would. I am really excited to be carrying this bill, HF 597, Climate Action Grants for Local Governments. This is a bill that Representative Vang initiated and carried in earlier sessions. Right now, as part of the 2007 Bipartisan Next Generation Energy Act, Minnesota has a goal of reducing carbon emissions 80% by 2050. And our Climate Action Framework, which you'll hear about, I believe, from the Pollution Control Agency after this, after a growth of this bill, necessarily aims us for carbon neutrality by 2050. Local governments are going to be key to achieving these goals. Up to about a month ago, I was an at-large member of St. Louis Park City Council. And during my time on council, I organized city elected officials from around the state on a group now called the Minnesota Cities Climate Coalition. The purpose of this group is to share best practices and have more of a voice with state government. One of the top things that I heard as part of that group, especially from smaller cities across the state, is a need for resources and assistance to help plan and do work on climate change. In many ways, local governments are on the front lines in our state dealing with climate change. They can reduce emissions from their communities by encouraging renewable energy and energy efficiency in buildings, by creating infrastructure and land use policy that makes it easier to live and get around without always needing a car, and by implementing recycling and organics programs, to name a few areas. Additionally, they are really feeling the infrastructure impacts of the increasing amounts of severe weather we're seeing that's caused by climate change, whether it be more flooding, stormwater management challenges, droughts, or stresses on roads from more freeze and thaw cycles. This bill can help local governments of all sizes, but really it's especially focused on helping smaller communities get started, create a plan, and also take advantage of learning and best practices from other communities. So I'm going to go briefly walk through the bill. The bill, as I said, is focused on local governments. And subdivision one is the key thing that changed from Representative Vang's bill is broadening this so that it incorporates all local units of government, not just cities. In subdivision two, the PCA is directed to establish a grant program for creating plans or helping to implement previously created plans to either adapt to climate change or to mitigate it. In subdivisions three and four, it talks about the grant application and awarding processes. Subdivision five sets a $50,000 limit for a maximum grant, requiring local matches of 50% for communities over 20,000 in population and 5% for communities under 20,000 in population. In subdivision six, PCA will provide or cause to be provided to grant recipients where appropriate greenhouse gas inventory data for the past 3 years. Subdivision 7, and by the way, this when you're planning out what you're doing from a climate perspective, you need to start with where you're at currently. So the greenhouse gas inventory helps cities or local units of government to know from what baseline they're starting. In Subdivision 7, we instruct PCA to provide tech support for people developing such plans, because one of the things we've learned is there is a real opportunity here for local units of government to learn from each other and to build on best practices. Subdivision 8 talks about eligible expenses, and then the appropriation for this is $5.5 million. I'll note that the fiscal note right now says $5 million. This was increased by $500K to account for the greenhouse gas inventories and also the tech support that's provided, so that at the end of the day we have target for 100, be able to support 100 local units of government at $50,000 each. And with that, I do have some testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just before we kind of get to the testifiers, just looking at your fiscal note, Representative Kras, what point, so you've got the assumptions looking at the MPCA require reasonable program development, how much money is going to go to them?
Representative Kras.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swedzinski, I'll actually probably should ask PCA to speak about that, because they created the fiscal note. But the intention is, as we structured it, is that the $5 million would be available for grants, and then the $500,000 that was added to it would be a mix of the support processes and the greenhouse gas inventories.
And I just would like to also say Frank Kolasch with the department is going to be one of the presenters, and so maybe that's a question we could ask. When he comes, if you'd like, if that, or did you have another question for?
Sure, just to follow up, thank you, Madam Chair. And then how many total FTEs do you feel this will create, both within state government and then within local governments?
Representative Kraft.
On the FTE, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Swedzinski. On the FTEs, I think it's indicated in here for state government per the fiscal note. But I'll let Mr. Kolasch reply to that when he comes in.
Okay.
And in local government, it's a $50,000 grant. I don't anticipate that's a full FTE in any local government, but that would be dependent on how local governments are using their grant.
Okay. Maybe then we'll go on to testifiers. And I think first on the list we have Kate Knuth with the 100% campaign. As you make your way to the table, when you get there, just please enter your name for the record and proceed with your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kate Knuth. I'm a managing and research director for the 100% campaign. And you've probably heard the 100% campaign is a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to help build an equitable climate and clean energy future for all Minnesotans. And we have nearly 60 organizational endorsers on board with the campaign. We believe fundamentally that to change everything, we need everyone, and that's why the campaign is excited to support House File 597 as amended by the DE4 amendment. House File 597 will enable more local governments to plan for and implement projects to create a better climate future for all of us. As the units of government closest to people, cities, counties, townships, school districts can lead climate action planning and implementation efforts that engage people directly in the work of bettering their communities with the shared goal of progress on climate change. In other words, these climate action planning processes not only address climate change, they help strengthen our democracy by developing the civic skills of Minnesotans across our state. Early last year, I published a paper with the 100% campaign that provided an overview and review of city climate action planning across Minnesota. I shared a link with this report with the committee administrator. I think it's in your packets or virtual packets, however those work right now. Cities are doing this work with support from existing programs like Xcel Energy's Partners in Energy program and the Green Step Cities program organized out of the PCA. However, only a small subset, less than 15 cities, have standalone climate action plans addressing both reducing climate pollution and building climate resilience in the state of Minnesota. And even if you count all of the other cities that are included in those water groups, it still doesn't cover a lot of the cities and even more widely local units of government in our state. And we're in a moment when enabling more local governments to step up with comprehensive climate action planning, including both reducing pollution and building resilience, will pay really big dividends. We have historic infrastructure and climate investments coming over the next decade from the federal government, and Minnesota is poised to make significant investments this year. Local government climate action planning and implementation will help communities and families take advantage of these opportunities at just the moment we need to be ramping up our climate action even further. However, it's important to note not every community has the financial resources or technical ability to do this right now. And we fundamentally believe every local government in the state should have the tools and resources to plan for and implement climate actions. This bill will eliminate help eliminate the financial barriers for local governments to do so, which will help us improve equitable climate outcomes. Importantly, the DE4 amendment adds funding for greenhouse gas emissions data and technical support. These centralized state investments to support local governments across Minnesota are just plain smart policy. Not every jurisdiction needs to develop the data and climate expertise itself and standalone, but rather should draw from state-supported expertise and capacity. In addition, cities can learn from each other in this work, and funding the ability to support this learning will make the grant program even more effective. So we at the 100% campaign strongly support House File 597 as amended. We want to enable more and more widespread climate action planning. Our only suggestion would be if you're able to increase the funding from $5 million to upwards of $10 million in one-time funding, because we think this kind of work is so important and would better enable communities to better leverage federal investments coming into our state. Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to ask questions, but you probably want additional testifiers.
Thank you, Ms. Knuth. Next, we have Mayor Patrick Hanlon from the City of Hopkins. Welcome to the committee. As you get settled, please enter your name for the records and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Patrick Hanlon. I am the mayor of Hopkins, Minnesota. Thank you for considering this bill today. I'm very excited about these opportunities. When there was mention of local jurisdictions who don't have the resources to be addressing climate change and to be able to leverage some of the resources that are out there, that is our city. We are a small city, and we face a lot of different aspects to in running a local government. And climate change is not an area that we're able to dedicate a lot of resources. And there, as you all know, there are a lot of federal resources with the Inflation Reduction Act and other federal funding that's out there that could really be leveraged in Minnesota. And small cities like Hopkins, like Waconia, like Walker, Minnesota, Grand Marais, could really use these resources to leverage funding. And to, in full disclosure, I know that better than most, because I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Sustainability, Healthy Homes, and Environment at the City of Minneapolis, and I run programs like this in Minneapolis. And we leverage these types of funds 8-to-1, creating energy efficiency, renewable energy projects where we can save folks money out in the community. So I know that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is here, and I really hope they focus on allowing small cities to get those funds easily out into the community, and so that folks on Main Street, our small businesses, low-income residents can really implement some energy-saving, energy-efficiency investments into their properties. So this is a really valuable tool statewide to leverage funding into our state. And as Kate Knuth mentioned, I'd love to see the fund be even greater, but I think we can show success with this amount of funding and let you all see what this type of funding can do in our state. So thank you for considering this bill today, and I really hope you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It looks like Representative Slavinsky has a brief question for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony. Just kind of, you know, you said you think this fund should be more. Do you have a rough estimate on how much the climate will change with the expenditure of this $5 million?
How much the climate will change? Mm-hmm. So I can say, Madam Chair, Representative, I can say in how much greenhouse gas emission reduction would be made from these types of investments. And so there's a lot of data that we have, Department of Energy has, in terms of what investments into low-income properties, into small businesses in our state, in terms of what you would get in terms of greenhouse gas reduction. And, you know, if you want to get into the debate of climate change, I don't know if I'm, but you can certainly calculate and have very precise calculation in terms of what the greenhouse gas reductions would be per project. And it would depend up to each individual local jurisdiction. It would be up to them and to how they spend the money in their community. And I believe that local jurisdictions know best in terms of how this money could be spent in their communities.
Thank you.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, so Madam Chair, so there's probably not, I mean, so you'd be willing to share how much you expect the temperature to go down or up or whatever because of this bill? That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Next on the list, we have Commissioner Victoria Reinhart from Ramsey County. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. Please enter your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Victoria Reinhart, and I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner, and was really pleased to serve with you on the Clean Water Council a few years back. I am here today representing the Association of Minnesota Counties and speaking on behalf of all counties and the local jurisdictions. I really loved what the mayor had to say about how important this is to our work, how important it is to the world, but in essence, this is something that's an add-on to local governments because we have a lot of responsibilities at the county and city and tribal nation governments, and this is something that's an add-on that is so important to our very existence. So, to begin with, I want to say how much we appreciate the amendment that goes beyond cities to include counties and tribal governments because it is a critical thing that we are working together. Climate change is already having a big impact on our residents. We're seeing milder winters, hotter summers, floods, droughts, severe storms, and in every season, and longer allergy seasons as well. These changes contribute to increased respiratory and cardiovascular disease, the spread of infectious and vector-borne disease, reduced access to healthy foods and basic needs, higher risks of heat-related illness, greater stress on mental health, and larger potential for death and injury during extreme weather events. Due to the compounding effects of racism and oppression, racially and ethnic diverse communities of color in Ramsey County face more severe and frequent negative impacts on health, safety, and well-being in relation to the effects of climate change. And I'll just interject here that the incoming president, the president of the National Association of Counties, we served on a Resilient Counties Advisory Board together, and he made a statement that I think is so true, and that is that severe weather or disasters don't discriminate, but often the responses do. And this is something that is really important because if you don't have that resilience built into your own community, it's very difficult. So I think that one of the things that we are working on in Ramsey County and I think is important across the state is the equitable climate resilience. And that's what we're really talking about here. The climate is changing. We all know that. It doesn't really matter why. It's changing, and we need to do something about it, and we need to do it on the individual level, on the county, the city, at all levels, working together. The pandemic in the last 2 years have been an ongoing case study of community resilience. But counties must be intentional, strategic, accountable, and focused in pursuing equitable, measurable, and impactful outcomes through climate mitigation and adaptation efforts. Addressing climate change requires a multi-layered approach that includes strategic action and supporting community-led initiatives to build resiliency. And again, I want to stress that community-led, and that's where all levels of government, everybody, the private sector, everybody coming together is what will make this effective. County planning efforts that would benefit from climate planning considerations include transportation and transit, emergency management, obviously flood and hazard mitigation, water planning and conservation, and solid waste management. The support of this bill is key to the success of these efforts. We appreciate the state's interest in being a partner and providing the necessary resources to assist counties in doing our part to address climate change. And with that, I thank you and would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your time, Madam Commissioner. Just a general question. You kind of had a list, kind of a lot of kind of scary things, you know, asthma and health care and all this other stuff. That mm-hmm. is your belief that this bill and the amendment that was passed will help will stop those things?
And well, one second, Commissioner, 1 minute. I will just maybe say to Representative Swazinski that I think most people around this table understand that one vote isn't going to win an election, but it's the collective action of many that are going to change and have impact. And so I understand your questioning to try and dig down into the specifics of singular or single behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I think we recognize that not one single action or single person or community will be able to make the collective change we all need to benefit from. So with that, I'll let Commissioner Reinhart have an opportunity to answer your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Yes, I do believe that it will make a difference. I think the last part of your question said, will it eliminate it or get rid of it? No, it won't. I mean, the health concerns are going to continue. They were here, have been here forever. But what we can do is to make the changes that we need to make. Personally, I am investing in solar energy. I am investing in an electric vehicle because I think it's the right thing to do, even though my brother said that I'm not going to live long enough to see the impacts of that. But I gave him a little grief for that. But actually, the payback on the solar energy, especially with the incentives from the federal government, is less than 10 years. So I think I'm going to make it. But anyway, I think that it is everybody doing their part, because it makes a difference to everyone's lives, and obviously it makes a difference for future generations. The climate has been changing for quite some time, and you can see with, and I can't remember what the statistics are, probably the PCA person could answer this, but I can't remember, it's something, the 1 degree difference makes a huge difference in what happens across the world. And I know that they probably have that information, but it is significant, and I think we are all experiencing it now, and that's why we all have to be part of the solution.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next, we have Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to committee. Please enter your name for the record and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I am with the League of Minnesota Cities. For those of you who have not had exposure to the League yet this session, the League of Minnesota Cities is a statewide association. We have 854 cities in the state of Minnesota. 837 of them are members of the League. The ones that aren't are all under 120 in population, and we will still answer the phone if they call. But they don't regularly need our support on a daily basis. The League is pleased to be here supporting the DE4 amendment language to House File 597. This is an issue that, as Representative Kraft said, he has worked on for a long time, but so has the League. We have been supportive of previous editions of this that were seen in the legislature and in the governor's previous budgets that are very similar to this. So this is an area where we do have cities coming forward and saying, how would we even start doing this? Where would we find out what we should be doing? And we don't, obviously, as an organization, have those resources. This is the kind of resource that needs to be there for a city that says, what are we supposed to do? These rain events are blowing out our stormwater system. How would we prevent that in the future? Or our wastewater system seems to have overflows every time there's a major rain event. How do we prevent that in the future? Or our water supplies seem to be at higher risk than they used to be, and we're seeing bumps in nitrogen levels occasionally. What do we do about that? And all of those issues could be things that could be looked at with these kinds of resources, in addition to things that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, like, you know, changing types of fleets or other issues like that within a city to address those issues, or LED lighting, or, you know, many of you have heard a long list of issues that could apply to this. But where our cities run into trouble is just knowing where to start and how to do the planning of what would actually make a difference in their city. And it's why we support local governments having the ability to look at flexibly what is the right thing for our city to be doing, because it could be very, very different from city to city. Even cities of the same size and in roughly the same geography could have very different priorities for what would need to be done. We think this program is a way to get those resources to those cities to help them use their resources wisely in the future as they look at doing infrastructure changes to their communities. And it ties in very well with the types of things the League has been supporting previously, which I expect you'll see as part of the governor's proposals out of the Pollution Control Agency, is specific planning on infrastructure vulnerability and specific building of those projects where infrastructure is found to be vulnerable, to make sure that we're actually making the improvements necessary where it will save public money to do that. So with that, Madam Chair, we are supportive of this bill and the DE4 amendment and of the general movement toward identifying and fixing vulnerable infrastructure issues. Thank you.
On the list of testifiers, we have Elizabeth Waifel with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Welcome to committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Akam and Vice Chair Kraft. My name is Elizabeth Waifel. I'm with the firm of Flaherty & Hood. Today, I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. If you are not familiar with our organization, we are a member organization of more than 100 cities outside the metropolitan area, ranging from Marshall to Wabasha to Grand Rapids to Nashwauk and to many more. As others have explained, particularly Craig Johnson, he kind of stole a little bit of my thunder. Our cities have been feeling the effects of changing climate patterns in a host of ways. Given the issues I work on, I would say that the extreme weather events really have been weighing on our cities. You know, you see in our stormwater, our wastewater systems, you know, but there's a lot of other impacts you've been hearing about today. And, you know, sort of preparing to address those in the future is really, really important to our cities. I will state that a lot of our cities have expressed interest in trying to plan for the future so that they can address these challenges and plan for a more resilient future. But when you're juggling projects on a tight budget, it's not always easy to make that happen. You know, if you've got a sewer main that breaks, or you're just dealing with trying to fill potholes, you know, setting aside $50,000 to make a plan is not at the top of your list. It's hard to explain to your citizens why you're not filling that pothole. You know, and that's why a program like this is really, really beneficial to our communities. So we really appreciate this proposal to give the cities resources to help develop such plans. I want to thank Representative Kraft for lowering the match for cities under 20,000 and suggest, heck, you could lower that to cities, you know, 50,000. And I'm sure that Wilmer, Owatonna, and Winona would appreciate that. You know, things have been moving real fast here at the legislature, and I'll admit I'm still gathering some specific input from some of our cities, but we're enthusiastic about this kind of proposal and look forward to working with Representative Kraft, Chair Akam, and many others as it moves forward. Thank you.
And last testifier today is Assistant Commissioner Frank Kolash with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Welcome to committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Frank Kolash. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Air and Climate Policy with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I use he, him pronouns. And while this bill is not part of the governor's proposal, we appreciate and acknowledge that it focuses on areas that we have heard repeatedly from stakeholders as we have developed Minnesota's climate action framework, and namely that is providing funding to conduct planning and implementation and technical assistance to local governments and to tribal nations in Minnesota. Through 6 years of surveys, we've consistently heard from local governments that access to funding for planning is a significant hurdle to them undertaking this type of planning and identifying the critical services that they need to provide to their residents in a changing climate. We've also heard through multiple stakeholder meetings as we developed the climate action framework over a year and a half that these kinds of resources to planning and implementation are, again, critical for local governments and tribal nations to move forward with taking climate action at a local level. And at a local level, they understand what they need and what they want, and that having these plans allows them to set themselves up and be better prepared for access to state and federal resources that are coming available. Part of our recognition with the climate change subcabinet and the governor's climate budget includes similar types of focus on providing technical assistance and resources to local governments and tribal nations, including requests from the Pollution Control Agency, requests from the Department of Commerce, and the requests from Department of Health. So we completely see and acknowledge and really thank the representative for addressing this in the bill, and look forward to working with Representative Kraft and with Chair Akam on as this bill moves forward.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Skusinski, did you have a question for this testifier?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, appreciate your time. Just a quick question from the department's view. We heard from both the city organizations, both the League of Minnesota Cities, but also the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And it seemed that they're leaning, at least from their testimony, was not necessarily addressing the bill and potentially going after grants within like carbon emissions, but more focused on how to plan for water events and sewer and mm-hmm. and freshwater and the rest. Will the grant, so as the grant applications come in, do you foresee them being as they come in, or will you weigh them on one side or the other of the poll, whether it's there, a city comes in with a plan of setting aside $50,000 to come up with a plan versus CO2 reductions, or take a study on sewer backups caused by extra water on their city streets. Will you see, from a competition standpoint, that one would be chosen over the other?
Commissioner Kolesch.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, certainly we would look first at what the language of the bill as would pass to understand what were the conditions within the funding for that. We would also use the learning that we have had, because we have had a climate resiliency planning grant program for local governments over the past year, and what we have found with that is focused on wastewater resiliency, stormwater resiliency, and then community services and community buildings resiliency. And that what we continue to see is that there is significant need and focus for building resiliency and planning for and understanding resiliency with those critical infrastructure like wastewater facilities and stormwater facilities. I think we would use that learning, but also be open to, with the structure that the bill allows, if a city wanted to include that, or if a city had already undertaken some of that planning and wanted to focus on greenhouse gas reductions, then we would look at those. I can't say exactly how we would do that if we received the funding, but we would create the criteria to try to make sure we strike the right balance. But we know from our surveys and from the stakeholder input that planning for resiliency is a particular need in Minnesota, and we're looking forward to be able to provide that.
And Representative Kraft, did you have anything further you'd like to add to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swazinski, the bill's language doesn't call out a specific split between the two. It recognizes that cities are facing both aspects of this, and that for some it'll be one versus the other, and some will have both in there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just maybe a question too, Madam Chair. I got in your hair late, but I didn't. Has this bill been to other committees, or is this the only stop for this committee?
This bill has not been to other committees.
Madam Chair,
motion was to be laid over.
From a process, it appears this bill could potentially spend a little time with the amount of attention given to wastewater and to the MPCA, the potential to go to environment. You know, I think that might be a potential rather than just lay the bill over, but it should be reached out, and it seems like a pretty decent amount of this bill has the chance of affecting some areas in those particular, and when it comes to wastewater and the rest. And I think it might be a wise decision to have the bill sent there.
And I thank you for that. And we've talked to the chair of the Environment Committee, and they don't feel the need to meet it or to hear it at this point. But if it will be in committee, if they decide change their mind and would like to hear it, we can certainly put it their way.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Kolash. And I think we have, I don't know if the questions are toward the commissioner or not. Representative Carroll was the next. Do you have a question for?
No, I don't, but I have a comment.
Okay.
Do you want me to wait or do you want questions?
Is there any more questions for Commissioner Kolash? Go ahead, Mr. Representative Hornstein, and then we'll go to Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I'm looking forward to the climate action framework as well. Does the PCA have a dollar figure on the impact of extreme weather events or other climate-related impacts on our infrastructure? And I'm obviously interested in the transportation infrastructure in particular. You know, a lot of images from Duluth, for example, several years ago, southeast Minnesota. Do you or others, any other state agencies, MMB or others, have you been able to quantify the costs of these extreme weather events?
Commissioner Kolash.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, we have not within the PCA's walls calculated that. We have been looking at the research that's coming out, talking about cost of inaction or the costs of warmer and wetter Minnesota with more severe storms, more severe precipitation events, more flooding, and then with the variations between very dry and very wet years happening. And I don't have a number off the top of my fingertips here. We can look into that to provide you a little bit more. But we also work with Department of Commerce, and Department of Commerce is looking in and talking with the insurance agencies about the insurance costs that we are seeing because of these. And the numbers are quite large because we are seeing more and more severe precipitation and severe weather events that are damaging various parts of our infrastructure, whether that's roads, bridges, water treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants, flooding out businesses, flooding out stormwater sewers and things.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. And I think it would be helpful, to this committee and others, I think, if we were able to get those figures, maybe either through a formal study, which we might have to give you some resources for, or more informally. But I think that would be very helpful and important. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And then Representative Igo, did you have a question for this testifier?
Yeah, I do, actually. Thank you, Madam Chair. So when I'm reading through the bill, subsection 4 in the awarding grants, usually when we're doing grants here at the legislature and we give it to different state agencies, there's usually some definitions in there about making sure that the money is evenly distributed around the state. And this subsection is only 3 lines long. So this will be my question to the Assistant Commissioner. How will the Commission make sure that the money doesn't stay in the 7-county metro and gets out to our greater Minnesota communities?
And we'll let the Commissioner have a shot and maybe the bill author as well. So Commissioner Kolash.
Madam Chair, Representative Igo, we would use the processes that we've used for other granting programs like our Volkswagen settlement and our climate resiliency planning grants that we have in existence now, and try to make sure that we do have an equitable split and an equitable distribution across the state, because we do understand and we hear very similar calls for need, calls for technical assistance from the entirety of Minnesota, but particularly greater Minnesota, where the populations are smaller and it's more difficult to have the large amounts of staff and technical expertise available to do these kinds of studies. So I think we would be looking at, again, implementing, if this bill goes forward, what the language and the criteria would be, but we would also use the knowledge and experience that we have with other grants to make sure that we're providing this in an equitable basis for greater Minnesota, for metro Minnesota as well, to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to have access to these grants so that they can do this critical planning moving forward.
Representative Kraft, did you have anything further to add to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Igo, for that question. The intention of this was that is very much the intention, that it is spread out equitably around the state, and it, with the dollar amounts, it's even biased towards a broader number of local governments participating. If there is specific language that you've seen in another bill that you like, I'd love to hear it. I'd love to look at it.
And if the bill's being laid over, there may be an opportunity there to work on that. Anything further, Representative Igoe?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like I said, yeah, just trying to, you know, encourage, you know, look on things. We have some bills we're working on in the Economic Development Committee that kind of work and set some scope so that the agencies kind of have a basis rather than working on their own. So I can follow up with you. Thank you.
And next, Representative Carroll.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I just want to applaud Representative Kraft for bringing this forward. I think it's a great idea. I spent 8 years on the Plymouth City Council. It's the seventh largest city in Minnesota. We struggled mightily with what to do about this. Some of the council didn't want to do anything, thinking nothing could be done, nothing can make a difference. And others of us took the approach, well, if we don't do something, nothing will be done. Even if it's not very much, we should at least try. So that was a struggle. We couldn't even muster the votes to join Green Step Cities. You know, a feel-good, good government type of programming to promote energy efficiency, conservation, combat climate change. So instead, we did it on our own. We did it piecemeal. For example, we have a new community, well, a refurbished, expanded community center. We put solar on the top. We're doing water irrigation practices. And we're looking at all sorts of small steps you could take that add up to big savings. For example, light bulbs and, you know, things like that. I'm so glad you brought this forward. I think that even our city could benefit from this. So thank you very much for that.
Any other questions from members? Any final comments from the bill author?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few thoughts. One is I really appreciate, Chair Akam, the way you framed the collective issue. I think that's spot on in how we need to think about climate action. But I want to address that a little bit further or in the context of this bill. When one city does something, one local government, one county, one tribal nation, the things we're talking about that are we in this planning enable, it's not just the greenhouse gas emissions reductions, right? It can save money, can reduce pollution, can make buildings in their community healthier, can help build community, right, by making it easier for people to walk and connect, and can make individual communities more resilient to severe weather. On its own, without the greenhouse gas emissions reductions, I think this bill still makes sense. Now, the other side to this is if we have 100 communities doing things around Minnesota, right, planning and then being ready to access IIJA funds and being creative and learning from each other, it is going to snowball and build on itself with other communities in Minnesota, and I think other communities outside of Minnesota. So I prefer to think about this not in the what does the narrow impact of one city mean, but what an impact can create as we build on things and learn from each other. If we do nothing, if we think, well, if because my action in the narrowest sense won't solve the problem, then we never solve any collective problems. This is a great bill. I'm so excited to carry it. I'm thrilled with the backing I hear from the League of Minnesota Cities, from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, from the Association of Minnesota Counties. This is a great way to help local governments get started in a way that works for them. We're not telling them what to do. We're in a way that works for them. And at the same time, to leverage knowledge learned by others. So I'm excited for this to be laid over and look forward to us being able to implement this. Thank you.
And the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Kraft. And with that, we're going to move on to the next part of our meeting. We are fortunate enough to have Assistant Commissioner Frank Kolesch here to talk with us about the climate action framework. And with that, welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives again. For the record, I'm Frank Kolesch, Assistant Commissioner for Air and Climate Policy with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I use he, him pronouns. And I really appreciate the opportunity to come to the committee and give an overview of Minnesota's plan to address climate change and try to minimize the on the global scale the most damaging parts, the most damaging impacts of climate change. So before I begin into the framework, I want to emphasize that the Climate Action Framework is actually a product of the Climate Change Subcabinet, which is made up of the leaders of 15 departments, agencies, boards, and councils at the state level. It was created by executive order in 2019, and we are extending that into the next term. The chair of the Climate Change Subcabinet is the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency. The Climate Change Subcabinet was brought together to coordinate state efforts to identify the policies and strategies necessary to reduce emissions, to bring us back in line with our greenhouse gas emission reduction targets, to identify the policies and strategies necessary to build the appropriate climate resiliency and adaptation into our communities, our landscapes, and our critical services moving forward. It was also meant to enhance engagement across all of the 15 climate change subcabinet and organizations on climate change to ensure that we are hearing the voices that have traditionally not been heard in these kinds of discussions. We were also charged with addressing inequities that have come from past conditions in Minnesota and ensuring that all Minnesotans will benefit from climate action in Minnesota. And then finally, it was targeted that we need to look for this opportunity to build a clean economy and clean jobs for Minnesota as we transition from a high carbon intensity economy to a lower carbon intensity economy. Also part of the development of the Climate Action Framework was the Advisory Council on Climate Change, which is made up of 15 appointees from the governor from throughout the state and across various business and other interests. The Advisory Council helped the Climate Change Subcabinet organize stakeholder work groups and reviewed the work prior to completion of the Climate Action Framework to ensure that it, again, represented as much of the voices of Minnesotans as we could within the timeline available. So why did we start with a Climate Action Framework? We decided to develop the framework because we heard from people across the state that we needed a clearer statement of what we want to accomplish together on climate action. We wanted to publish our ideas and give people something to respond to and discuss. And the framework brings about conversations like this one that we are having here about climate action in Minnesota to protect our communities, our people, our businesses, and our landscapes. Within the Climate Action Framework, we have measures of progress that we intend to serve as a tool for accountability for the Climate Action Framework. We do not want this report to be gathering virtual dust on a website and then wondering what happened to that report a few years ago. We want to keep this fresh and updated. So we have the measures of progress. We're developing the way that we can collect that data and then report that data internal to the Climate Change Subcabinet and then external to all Minnesotans. And we're hoping to review and build an update process that will check in on what we've accomplished and what we still have to do and allow us to organize our thinking and our approaches around reducing emissions, building resiliency, addressing inequities, and building a clean economy for Minnesota. And then finally, we hope that the framework will catalyze action across sectors. And ultimately, that's what we need is climate action. And we know that as state agencies and the Advisory Council, we cannot do this alone. We need activities from everyone in Minnesota, including the business sector, local governments, tribal nations, individuals, nonprofit organizations moving forward. We hope that we've created a document that everyone can see themselves in and see how they can help work towards our vision of climate action for Minnesota. And it's important to emphasize that the Climate Action Framework identifies some ambitious but achievable short-term steps that we can take to move towards long-term success. And it does not lay out everything that we must do to achieve our greenhouse gas reduction goals or build all the resiliency we need in the face of climate change. But it starts the conversation and it identifies how we can all participate in moving forward with climate action. The Climate Action Framework took about a year and a half to construct. We started in the summer of 2021. And we had significant discussions with stakeholders at that time. We had a web portal where all Minnesotans could participate and provide information to us. We also met with stakeholders throughout that entire time to talk about what the structure of the Climate Action Framework should look like. In particular, we met with tribal nations through a government-to-government climate forum to talk about how we can work with tribal governments and tribal nations to ensure that they see themselves in this climate plan for Minnesota. In February 2022, we published a draft climate action framework for review, and we heard from more than 3,000 Minnesotans through an online engagement forum on their input, and we also convened 6 stakeholder work groups for each of the goal chapters within the framework, and we met with those more than 200 people across all of those 6 work groups, meeting somewhere between 3 to 8 times over the time frame from March until May of 2022 to identify ways that we could improve the climate action framework. That information was then turned over to the Advisory Council on Climate Change, who reviewed that as well as the Climate Change Subcabinet. And then in June of 2022, we met with the Advisory Council on Climate Change, heard their priorities for changes and modifications to the Climate Action Framework. We took that input over the summer of 2022 and published the Climate Action Framework in September of 2022. The key messages within the Climate Action Framework is that climate change is happening now. We heard in prior testimony the challenges that Minnesotans are facing due to a changing climate. We work with the Department of Natural Resources. Their climatology office tells us Minnesota is getting warmer and wetter, and that we expect that to continue. That Minnesota is seeing more heavy precipitation events, heavy severe storm events, and flooding, and we anticipate that for that to continue into the future. And that we also anticipate that the changing climate will impact our ecosystems and our natural resources, which will impact how Minnesotans experience the Minnesota that they remember. We also note within the framework that we must accelerate action now. We did not make adequate progress on the Next Generation Energy Act goals for Minnesota in prior years, and at the national level and at the global level, we have not been making adequate progress on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and we are heading towards temperature changes that would be considered catastrophic and very difficult for us to manage, particularly in Minnesota, where we're seeing higher warming occur in Minnesota in the northern latitudes in our wintertime lows, where we have already seen increases of between 5 to 7 degrees throughout various parts of Minnesota. We also identified that climate change affects everyone, but some people are hit harder by climate change, and some people have less resources in order to adapt and to the changing climate and be able to be prepared for the changing climate, so that we needed to address equity in every chapter. We know that we must work together to meet our goals across all of the stakeholders in Minnesota. And in particular, while this sounds dire and a crisis, it also gives us an opportunity to grow our economy and improve our health, equity, and the environment by looking for ways that we can grow clean jobs in Minnesota as we move towards a low-carbon economy. So the vision for our state that is identified in the framework is that we will be carbon neutral, that we will reduce emissions to the degree that we can, and that any remaining emissions will be offset by carbon that we are able to store on our lands, particularly our landscapes, particularly our forests, our wetlands, our peatlands, our grasslands, and our working lands. Minnesota should also be resilient, that we need to be able to plan and be prepared to respond to a warmer and wetter Minnesota with more severe storms, and that we need to be able to recover from the impacts of climate change so that all Minnesotans can thrive. And then equitable. We acknowledge and address inequitable and inaccessible systems, and that's contributing to some communities feeling different effects and disproportionate impacts from climate change. We want to ensure that there's a fair distribution of the benefits of climate action in Minnesota, and that every Minnesotan has an opportunity to meaningfully participate in the discussions around climate action, and in particular focusing on how the actions we take now will impact future generations. Additional targets that we included in the framework were to respond to comments that we heard from many Minnesotans, but particularly the Advisory Council on Climate Change, that we needed to look to and start tracking ourselves against the best science by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which has said that we need to reduce emissions by 50% by 2030 from a 2005 baseline, and then reach the carbon neutral by 2050 from a 2005 baseline, and that we also have to prioritize the investments in resiliency and adaptation in the next 10 years to, again, prepare us for the changing climate in Minnesota. And again, we need action by all Minnesotans to accomplish this. The framework itself is organized into six different chapters. Three of these chapters are what we would consider more of our traditional emission sectors, with a clean transportation goal chapter, a climate smart natural and working lands goal chapter, and then the clean energy and efficient buildings goal chapter. Then there are three goal chapters that focus on cross-cutting issues that affect all Minnesotans, and that's resilient communities, healthy lives and communities, and then build, and then the clean economy chapter. Each chapter includes a summary and the context of the challenges being faced, identifies priority actions and larger initiatives that we need to achieve to make progress, measures of progress that we can use to gauge our activities, and then the equity considerations and addressing opportunities for all. Turning to the first chapter, clean transportation, we recognize that our transportation sector is the largest emitter of greenhouse gases in Minnesota and represents a significant opportunity to reduce emissions that contribute to climate change. We can connect and serve people through a safe, equitable, and sustainable transportation system, a clean transportation system that's providing walking, biking, rolling, and transit options that are accessible, safe, and plentiful. It also includes the planning and infrastructure and education needed for cleaner vehicles and cleaner fuel technologies, including both electric vehicles and biofuels. The priority actions that we identify in the clean transportation chapter are increasing the funding for non-motorized transportation so that direct resources go towards statewide pedestrian and bicycle networks. We also look to create more reliable and convenient transit networks, prioritize services in communities where transit is essential and residents are disproportionately affected by air pollution, and then prioritize land use that facilitates multimodal transportation options. Additional priority actions in the clean transportation chapter are exploring opportunities for clean fuel standards and incentives and investments to create markets for cleaner fuels such as advanced biofuels, renewable natural gas, sustainable aviation fuels, and electricity. We also want to coordinate with neighbor states, tribes, and other partners to establish a Midwest regional EV charging network, and then create a strategy to increase EV charging infrastructure and EV access and availability by educating communities about the benefits of electric vehicles. And then providing a few highlights of governor's budget proposals from the climate change subcabinet. I'm only going to present a handful here in this presentation. There are more than 30 in the governor's proposal, and the total amount is more than $700 million requested in order to implement the climate action framework. But within the transportation sector, the Department of Transportation seeking $4 million to maximize federal transportation climate funding for federal matching to make sure that we maximize the amount of federal funds coming to Minnesota. The Department of Transportation also is seeking $7.4 million for a sustainable aviation fuel pilot to provide grants and loans to advance Minnesota's technology and innovation in this area. And then with the Metropolitan Council seeking $29 million for matching funds for the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act for bus electrification. Turning to the Climate Smart and Natural and Working Lands chapter, we are looking at this area as presents significant challenges and opportunities about how we manage our lands. This goal includes actions like incentivizing sustainable farming practices, such as cover crops, conservation tillage, and diverse crop rotations, in addition to accelerating forest, grassland, and wetland restoration. By managing our lands correctly, we can absorb and store carbon, reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the agricultural sector, and sustain a resilient landscape, while also producing food and other products to sustain our local communities. The priority actions that we identified in this chapter include incentivizing beneficial practices to assist in implementation, including increased access to technologies, equipment, and seed plant material to expand climate-resilient agriculture and forestry.
We also seek to manage agricultural lands in ways that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, particularly potent gases such as methane and nitrous oxide. We also look to prioritize activities that would increase water storage and infiltration and manage drainage to reduce runoff and minimize downstream flooding, erosion, and habitat loss. Additional priority actions are promoting local and community-based agriculture to reduce transportation needs and increase food access, especially in underserved communities. We also want to invest in new markets and supply chains for crops that keep soil covered year-round and for wood products that increase carbon storage and substitute for more fossil fuel-intensive materials. And we also want to seek a co-benefit of prioritizing groundwater and drinking water protection in vulnerable areas. A few of the budget proposals I want to highlight that were in the governor's budget from this area include the Department of Agriculture seeking $4 million for soil health equipment grants to be able to provide access for farmers to the new types of equipment that they will need as they implement new best management practices that build soil health, protect water quality, and protect the climate. The Board of Water and Soil Resources is seeking $27 million for a soil health practices acceleration program to ensure that farmers have access to the loans, grants, and technical assistance that they need to continue this transition to a lower carbon practices. And then the Department of Natural Resources has a number of requests in that protect and restore carbon in multiple landscapes, including forests, private forests, peatlands, wetlands, grasslands, and urban forests as well. Turning to the Resilient Communities chapter, we note that only 12% of Minnesota communities have a comprehensive plan to adapt to the impacts of climate change, and that we have heard that communities need financial and technical support to develop climate resiliency plans that reflect their individual needs. We can build resilient communities by equipping local leaders with tools that they need to adapt to extreme weather caused by a changing climate. Actions like updating stormwater infrastructure to handle more rain, planting more trees to provide shade, and providing communities with needed tools, maps, and data to help protect Minnesotans from climate change. The priority actions in this chapter are to provide more resources for adaptation by expanding funding, staff capacity, technical support, and training for planning and implementation of adaptation and resiliency projects. We also want to increase the capacity of the Green Step City program by sharing resiliency best practices and adaptation resources and expanding pilot programs that include tribal nations, schools, counties, and townships. We want to plant climate-ready trees and preserve mature trees. Climate-ready tree species are well adapted to the challenges such as heat, drought, extreme weather, and pests. Along with mature trees, they decrease energy use in homes and buildings and mitigate heat islands, and they should be reused to replace diseased trees. We also want to look at expanding green infrastructure and stormwater management control to control flooding, restore lost habitat, and improve water quality. We want to adopt resilient building policies by adopting provisions in construction and remodeling codes that prioritize adaptive reuse and create resilient design standards. We want to assess vulnerabilities at critical facilities by using climate projections to predict future hazards and make plans to ensure continuity of operations. And we want to combat heat islands by providing funding and technical assistance to help communities reduce their urban heat island effect. Three of the highlighted budget items that I want to note is that the Pollution Control Agency has requested more than $173 million for resilient communities grants and technical assistance to ensure that we have funding available to implement the planning grants to implement projects for stormwater, for wastewater, and for community needs on an ongoing basis. The Department of Commerce has requested $32.5 million to strengthen Minnesota homes, learning from states in southeastern part of the United States where they are trying to prepare the homes for extreme weather and for high precipitation, heavy precipitation events before they happen so that we're not always responding to and rebuilding after extreme weather. And then the Department of Health has requested $16 million to strengthen the public drinking water systems infrastructure, again, making sure that those critical services are available to Minnesotans as we experience a changing climate. The next chapter in the framework is the Climate, Energy, and Efficient Buildings chapter. We look to
identify that Minnesota has made significant strides in reducing emissions, particularly from the electric generation sector. Released in our report today, we have seen a 54% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from our electric generation sector since 2005 due to significant public policy and private decisions moving forward to reduce our coal usage and reduce our use of renewables on the system. We also want to invest in clean energy and energy efficiency and energy reliability, which will create jobs, lower energy costs, and contribute it to a more stable climate. Our goal of this chapter is establishing a statewide standard to achieve 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040, and this will require actions like investing in our grid to accommodate more clean energy and updating buildings across Minnesota to become more energy efficient. The priority actions, I already identified two of them. One is establishing the standard for 100% carbon-free electricity and looking for ways to adapt the grid to make sure that we are prepared for adding more renewables onto the grid and also prepared for a changing climate. And we also want to reduce the emissions that are related to the burning of fossil fuels in heating and cooling homes and businesses in Minnesota. We also want to seek to reduce energy use and waste. We want to support opportunities for additional incentives, loans, and policies for existing homes, businesses, governments, and schools in order to reduce energy use for all Minnesotans, as well as improve health through better air quality. We want to investigate supply-side supports and pricing supports for energy efficiency appliances, heating and air conditioning equipment, and domestic water heaters so that the low-cost choice is also an energy-efficient choice. And we want to improve codes and standards for all new commercial and large multifamily housing units to achieve net zero by 2036. Some of the highlighted budget requests here are the Department of Commerce seeking just over $113 million for a statewide competitiveness fund that will provide matching funds for federal dollars that are part of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and the Inflation Reduction Act, and also provide technical assistance and other types of assistance to local governments, tribal nations, and other partners who are eligible for these federal funds to ensure that we can maximize the utility of the federal funds in Minnesota and achieve our targets in the climate action framework. The Department of Commerce also has just over $7 million request for pre-weatherization and workforce training to begin preparing our existing buildings for the weatherization work that needs to go forward that will reduce the costs of energy for Minnesotans and make life more comfortable for Minnesotans by pre-weatherizing their homes and preparing those. And then with labor and industry, $406,000 for existing energy building energy efficiency, because we know that while we'll have some focus on new buildings, we also need to focus on existing buildings as well to make those energy efficient and comfortable and low cost for Minnesotans. Turning to the Healthy Lives and Communities chapter, we know that changes in Minnesota's climate threaten the health of all our communities, but not everyone experiences these impacts equally. Low-income residents, communities of color, and others face the biggest burden of climate change impacts in Minnesota. We must protect the health and well-being of all Minnesotans in the face of climate change. Reducing the health impacts of climate change includes including potentials for heat-related illnesses, respiratory conditions, diseases transmitted by ticks and mosquitoes, and the physical and emotional costs of extreme weather is a crucial part of our climate work. The priority actions that we have in this chapter include raising the awareness of health impacts, building partnerships to improve education, and raise awareness of the health impacts caused by climate change. We want to fund and support community-led initiatives across Minnesota that address health risks from climate change and improve health outcomes. We want to prepare for diseases. We want to build the capacity for public health agencies and communities to prepare for and respond to new and current diseases that are increasing due to climate change. We also want to track, monitor, and compile a regular report on the health impacts of climate change in diverse populations in Minnesota. We want to adapt our outdoor recreation lands for a changing climate to better serve our changing demographics. We want to ensure hospitals and other facilities can withstand extreme weather and other hazards and plan for and implement adaptation projects. and we wanted to provide, deliver culturally appropriate, affordable, and responsive health care and mental health services to protect public health and create a foundation for climate resiliency in Minnesota. Two of the highlighted budget items in this area are Department of Health seeking funds for a public health climate resiliency grant program to allow communities to address the health impacts of a changing climate in their communities, and also the Pollution Control Agency seeking funding to set up a process where we can provide a tribal assistance contractor to tribal nations so they can apply for the funds at the federal or state level that are eligible and will provide benefits to them to build resiliency, protect the health of their residents and their members, and also be able to reduce greenhouse gases. The final chapter is the clean economy chapter. We recognize that reducing greenhouse gas emissions is an opportunity to build an economy that addresses climate change and equitably provides family-sustaining jobs for Minnesotans across the state. By transitioning to a cleaner economy, we must include solutions that benefit everyone. By some estimates, Minnesota can create 16,000 additional jobs by 2025 and 39,000 jobs by 2050 if we take action to significantly reduce our carbon emissions. And achieving this goal will require public and private investments, emerging research and technology, as well as workforce developments to ensure Minnesotans are prepared for the job opportunities created in a new clean economy. Some of the priority actions that we identify in the clean economy chapter are we want to complete a clean economy workforce and economic development plan to assess high growth sectors, potential job losses, and workforce and skill set needs using inclusive definitions of clean jobs. We want to encourage innovation by working with tribal nations, universities, commercial consortiums, and private labs to nurture new technologies in a clean economy businesses. We want to develop worker skills and create a workforce strategies that train, upskill, and reskill workers to adapt to changing technology and job needs. We want to support power plant host communities and assist communities with aging fossil fuel-run power plants to ensure a successful transition, providing long-term planning and support to train and retrain workers and promote economic development. We want to identify and remove barriers to employment and training for women, people of color, and individuals with disabilities. In addition, diversify the clean economy workforce in both leadership positions and frontline careers. And we want to assist businesses moving towards sustainability and identifying supply chain needs and support environmental goals by Minnesota's businesses. The three highlighted budget requests from this area are from the Department of Labor and Industry of $3 million for growing clean economy apprenticeships, using apprenticeships for the retraining of workers, also the purchase of equipment to allow these types of opportunities for retraining to clean economy jobs to happen. The Department of Employment and Economic Development, $10 million for energy transition grant programs to help those fossil fuel host communities to transition as the coal-fired power plants are closing, to transition their tax base, their job base to a clean economy. And then with the Department of Commerce, with $61.5 million for solar on schools to ensure that all Minnesota schools outside of the Xcel territory are able to install solar on their rooftops. So what's next with the climate change, climate action framework? We know that we must continue engagement with Minnesotans. We tried very hard in the development of the framework to reach as many Minnesotans and hear as many voices as possible, but we want to continue that conversation and continue to hear from voices that are traditionally not part of the conversation for climate action. We know that we need to improve our data and measures, particularly with the measures of progress identified within the climate action framework, to ensure that we are accountable to the subcabinet and to all Minnesotans for moving forward with climate action that reduces emissions, builds resiliency, addresses inequities, and builds a clean economy. We are looking for ways that we can leverage federal funding and federal opportunities with the Climate Action Framework, both with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and the Inflation Reduction Act forthcoming, that we can maximize those monies coming to Minnesota and get the benefits for all Minnesotans taking action on climate and building a better Minnesota. We also know that we need to continue and advance our critical policies and programs. While the budget proposals are large and substantial, we also have a significant amount of work already going on across the climate change subcabinet taking action on climate change. We need to continue to support that and address that moving forward. And then we need to build partnerships. We need all Minnesotans to see themselves in the climate action framework. We need everyone to be able to move forward, identify actions that they can take, and make progress on achieving the goals in the climate action framework and building a clean economy, reducing emissions, building resiliency, and addressing inequality. The framework itself is available at this website, and that concludes my prepared remarks. I'm open for questions.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Kolesch. I appreciate you taking time and coming to do this today. I have a quick question before I check to see if others in the room do as well. You, I really appreciated in your presentation that you showed different climate-related provisions in the governor's budget from many different state agencies, and I think that that's just really important to show how climate really does impact so many different parts of our life. And in the climate framework, you have set up, shared with us the different chapters, and you also shared that in the chapter that includes energy generation that we've made significant progress, and which is great. And then my question for you is, within those chapters or the goal chapters, I guess, are there, since we know we've made some progress on that part of that goal or chapter, are there others that are more stubborn that maybe need more attention that we need to be focusing on along with energy?
Madam Chair, thank you for that question. And I would say we need emission reductions across all of the sectors. The importance of achieving the emission reductions in the electric generation sector is then that allows us access to clean electricity that can impact and reduce the use of fossil fuels in other sectors, particularly in the building sector and in the industrial sector. Those are particularly challenging because of the widespread use of fossil fuels, natural gas, and in the industrial sector, natural gas, some coal, and some oil as well. And having access to clean electricity is critical to that. Having access to clean electricity is also critical to the transportation sector, where we are looking at still having millions of vehicles that still need some sort of liquid fuel, but making that transition to electric vehicles, allowing those to reduce the emissions from that sector as well. So the clean electricity is the linchpin, it's the foundation of achieving emission reductions across all of the other emission reduction sectors.
Thank you. Looks like Representative Elfendorf has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. As you're speaking, I just had some different questions, if you could help me answer some of those. So, for example, I heard you say you were looking at $65 million for solar for schools. And can you explain a little bit more what schools and how many would $65 million reach?
Commissioner Kolesch.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't want to speak too much because that is a Department of Commerce request. My understanding of the proposal is that would provide enough funding to support solar on schools for every school that is outside the Xcel territory. And then within the Xcel territory, there's a different program that's available for those schools. So the intent would be, as I understand it, but I would defer to Department of Commerce to describe this, would want to target to provide solar on every school in Minnesota.
And maybe I can just provide a little background too, as the author of the Solar on Schools bill last year. The Commerce program will put 40 kilowatts of solar on those buildings outside of the Xcel territory, and that when they released this program last year, I think it was $8 million that we had, there was significant interest and not nearly enough funds to take care of all of the interest, and I think that's the impetus of this governor's budget proposal. Okay. Commissioner Kirk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So out of that $65 million then, like, what percentage of the energy use with those solar, I mean, are we looking to, you know, to go that they're just running off of the solar, or I'm just confused on that. How many schools are we touching, and then what percentage reduction would that happen with those solar? Do you have those numbers?
I don't. We can certainly reach out to the Department of Commerce for those specific numbers, and I'm sure it would vary from building to building. But yeah, we can look into those for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just in reference, so last week, you know, we had heard an update from the Prairie Island Indian Tribe, and they had $42 million that they're implementing. And, you know, that's what I'm just trying to compare. And I know that, you know, they're nowhere near, you know, to being like net zero with that kind of, so it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem like $65 million for schools, you know, that's gonna take it down net zero. And then I'm sorry, Madam Chair, can I ask another question? Okay, so as we are driving this demand for solar up and up, have we taken into account how much increased cost this is going to be, and if it's going to be more difficult for us to get these solar panels? Is that being taken into account just because we're pushing us on such an accelerated time frame? I'm wondering, are there some obstacles coming down the road that maybe we haven't thought of?
Madam Chair, Representative, I would have to defer to the Department of Commerce on their understanding of what the impacts of this bill would be on supply chain and availability of solar panels in relation to Minnesota, and then what's happening with federal funds as well.
Okay, and just one more, if I can, please. Okay, Madam Chair, thank you so much, Commissioner. You are very passionate about the environment and the climate, and I appreciate that about you. I don't think most people in this room know that I am in a sales business that we specialize in environmental clean greening products, and I've been very passionate about that my whole life, about reducing chemicals into the environment, reducing plastics, and that is my passion. So for 14 years, I have built a large business that spreads across the United States, and have been very involved in educating people on green cleaning and reducing our emissions and many things that we talk about today. So I am very passionate about this topic. So I just want to ask you really quick, but I know you said during your presentation, you know, that we're in a dire crisis and that temperatures are rising. So I just want to go back. And in the 70s, we also had a time where it was global cooling. In the 80s, we had global warming. And as a student, I know that was very worrisome for me and very scary to hear that, you know, the temperatures were rising, the ocean was rising, and that possibly California was going to go under, Florida was going to go under. I mean, do you remember any of that from the 80s? Okay, so, you know, I'm dating myself, but, you know, fast forward now, we're 30 years ahead. We've now switched from global cooling to global warming to climate change. And although I am just as passionate, I would say, as everyone in this room, if you knew my background, about helping the environment and reducing, you know, our chemicals and being very good to our environment, it's concerning to me that we're changing the bar. We keep on changing the bar. And also, I guess if you could just, answer that, I do wonder how much this is affecting our, as we hear, our children are suffering, many from mental health crisis, of how much pressure and what we're doing to our children by talking about this so much. As I remember in the 80s, as a child, being scared, and this has only escalated from there. So has there been any studies done on that?
Commissioner Kolesh, I'm not sure you have a response for that, but please feel free.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have a specific citation for that, but we have heard from students and youth, and including tribal youth, about the challenges and the dire consequences that they're facing as well. Some have cited papers that mentioned the impacts on mental health, and I particularly think that what we hear from them mm-hmm. is that exists and that's real. Mm-hmm. But what they need from us is to take action and to stand up and actually meet what we know we need to do, which is reduce our emissions and begin building the resiliency so that they have a Minnesota that is prepared for the changing climate, but is also doing our part to reduce emissions so that we are doing our part to then affect the
the global temperature change that is expected and projected with the projections. And the changing on the terminology comes down to focusing on climate change, because it's not just the warming of the planet that is the problem. It's the impacts that it's having on our landscapes, on our communities, and the people that we need to focus on. So the changing climate, we've heard about that with more heavy storms, more precipitation, more flooding. How that impacts us makes a significant amount of difference. And we're already seeing that in Minnesota with significant temperature increases, more than 7 degrees in northern Minnesota, more than 6 degrees in central Minnesota, and more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit in the last century. And so that's why we're focusing on reducing emissions and then preparing ourselves for the changing climate that's already built into the system because of our past emissions.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And one final question from Representative Carroll.
It wasn't a question, it's just a comment, response to Representative Oliver. In response to what it's doing to the kids, anecdotally, I can tell you what it's doing to my kids and their friends. It's motivating the heck out of them. It's not scaring them, it's motivating them to make changes.
Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Commissioner Kolesch, for being here today. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.